Ryan, good afternoon, and welcome to At the Systemic Futures podcast. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, former GE business leader turned podcast host and expert advisor on ecosystemic transformation. I am thrilled to be joined by a brilliant panel of co-hosts here today. I'm going to pass the mic over to our guests to let them introduce themselves. We'll start with you, Marco.
Hey, I'm Marco Nunziata. I'm an economist, and once an economist, always an economist. I've had a career spanning policy with the International Monetary Fund, then private finance, and then industry with GE, where I worked a lot, not just on global economics, but also on innovation and strategy, which is what fueled my passion and brought me here. Most importantly, I'm based in Miami, where I go running, trying to avoid the crocodiles.
Fantastic. Thank you, Marco. Over to you, Ed.
Hi, I'm Ed Powell. I spent about a decade at a place called Lincoln Laboratory at MIT in space surveillance, and then developed an approach to optimizing complex systems using economic models. And for the last 25 years, we've launched ventures to optimize supply chain services, intellectual property, insurance, and healthcare.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ed. And Tom?
Hey, I'm Tom Cook, co-founder and CEO of Spacely, independent talent marketplace for the aerospace industry. I spent 24 years in the Air Force developing, operating, maintaining new generation space systems, retired in 2017, have been consulting with the aerospace industry ever since.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tom. So as you can see, audience, we are going to be heavy on the economics, heavy on the ecosystems, and heavy on the fun in this conversation. So we're thrilled that you could join us today. So let's spend a little time talking about ecosystemic futures. What exactly does that mean? It used to be that when somebody would describe an ecosystem, it was often in reference to a biological community where you would see the interaction of different organisms in a mutually shared environment. Kind of fast forwarding a few years and looking at our world today, as our world is becoming increasingly digital and interconnected and interdependent, the term ecosystems has taken on a much broader meaning. Today, reflecting the interconnected networks that drive how we innovate and build for the future. Thinking in an ecosystemic way has become increasingly central to our strategies for the future, for how we can achieve sustainability, resilience in society, industry, and policy. Business leaders, academics, and futurists alike are quickly realizing that you can't have one without the other. As we kick off this new podcast series, I'm excited to dive into the topic of ecosystemic futures and discuss the implications for our networked ecosystem on the future of innovation, operation, and society at large. So with that, let's jump in. And thank you all for joining. As you know, this is a topic that I'm deeply passionate about, and I'm excited to hear your perspectives. So Marco, let's start with you. How has the concept or the notion of ecosystems changed over the past 16 years, 15 years from your perspective?
I think it's changed very deeply, and it goes back to what you mentioned at the beginning, Diane, which is our understanding of how important ecosystems are and how they function has become a lot more sophisticated. 15 years ago, I think the parallel with ecosystems in biology was still fairly superficial. If you were a corporate, you probably thought that your ecosystem included your customers, your suppliers, maybe your competitors. But then your thinking about ecosystems really stopped at the classic interactions with this set of players. Now I think we've understood that the ecosystem is something which is a lot more dynamic, more complex, and more nuanced. Partly it's because of the changes in technology, as you mentioned, so the importance of digital technology, which extends the concept of the ecosystems, that has played an enormous role, but also because the world itself has become a lot more interconnected and complex. So I think we now understand much better that we have to understand that the extent and the nature of the interactions within the ecosystem changes. What you consider to be as your ecosystem changes over time. That the interdependencies themselves are more complex, and the nature of the interdependencies also changes over time. And that there are multiple feedback mechanisms that one needs to pay attention to. And I think gradually, because of this, we are becoming more aware that once you realize you're operating in an ecosystems world, you need to think more and more in terms of systems thinking. So you need to think in terms of general equilibrium, keeping in mind all the repercussions of everything you do, of every other shock within the ecosystem, and keeping in mind the intended and unintended consequences of every action. So I think our understanding of ecosystems has become a lot more nuanced and a lot more complex. I think we're now entering the second and more challenging phase, which is how to tailor our strategies to this better understanding of ecosystems.
Brilliant. Sounds like an exciting new era in business innovation and business model innovation. And if we think about how this is informing really changes and the evolution of ecosystem services and use cases and outcomes, Tom, maybe share your perspective regarding what Marco just very eloquently kind of laid out for us. How does that start to inform ecosystem services and their forest planning use cases?
Yeah, I think to Marco's point, because of the additional nuance and complexity, it drives additional optionality that wasn't there before from supply side and demand side. And so when you're looking at trying to optimize conditions for operations, you now have greater optionality in how you tackle a supply, as well as, you know, with the demand, being able to more easily turn that on and off so you don't have consistent expenditures going out because your ecosystem is more static. The dynamic nature of this new digital era allows for greater optionality, greater flexibility, agility, resiliency, but it also takes a different mentality as far as in the old days, you know, you kind of set up your supply system, your ecosystem one time and you let it stay there. And now you don't have to do that as much. And the folks that are figuring that out from an operation standpoint have shown that they have greater resiliency and you know, kind of operational optionality that exists as a result of these new protocols in the complex digital era where these ecosystems now thrive.
Yeah, it sounds exciting, but complicated, right? And with the pace and kind of volatility of changes in markets today, getting a handle on that optionality and dynamism in organizational decisions and actions sounds like it could be a little daunting for leaders. So Ed, you have a lot of experience in this arena and certainly a point of view. What are your thoughts on how the drivers of ecosystems have changed over time and we might see that evolving going forward?
Well, our most fundamental understanding of systems, especially network systems, has changed drastically with the advent of the internet. We had lots of discussions and academic, you know, work around graph theory and around the ideas of various kind of networked infrastructures. And yet the internet changed all that. 20 years ago, we would have all been talking about things like first mover advantage. But today we don't Inktomi everything, we Google it. And Google was like the 11th search engine. So it's actually the whole way that networked ecosystems form up are in what are called small worlds. They're kind of repeatable small clusters and they kind of auto assemble. And initially what will happen is people find kind of mispriced assets within those networked systems. But because of this kind of network response time and the network resilience, it can rapidly adapt to that. The market can adapt, the supply and the demand can meet, and therefore you meet a efficiency that's really not possible in a traditional, highly frictional business setting.
Brilliant, brilliant. So it sounds like the new market economy and systems thinking, back to Marco's point, becomes incredibly essential, right? If we're thinking about these new kind of micro worlds, micro economies, and managing efficiencies of information, actions, decisions, and transactions within those small worlds, the networks of small worlds, how do you, Ed, start to think about optimizing the trade-off decisions in that new, incredibly dynamic and interconnected environment?
So it's interesting, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I oftentimes think about, you know, the new world we're entering, some disruption in the past has been just as disruptive to that population. And Paul Romer actually analyzed the GDP of countries and found that only 60% of the productivity of any country could be attributable to individual productivity. It was about having guilds and unions and teams and, you know, as some folks would say, hives. And so I think what's going to happen is there will be levels of productivity that are created by assembling very high-functioning, highly productive teams. And those teams in that kind of gig infrastructure will be significantly more productive than just a group of individuals, you know, together that haven't been essentially assembled correctly.
Yeah, that has, it carries a lot of implications for the way we design work and assign work and compensate for work from just based on the kind of the assemblage of teams in a very dynamic and fast-paced world. Tom, over to you. How does this ecosystemic operating model differ from other business and operating models from your perspective?
Yeah, a couple of things. You just highlighted one, which was really the work design in the future. Because of the pace of technological change and adaptation of new technologies in enterprise business, that's constantly putting pressure on what do you have the people and the humans do? And what is it that you've asked them to do when you've brought them on as a full-time hire? And then there's a new capability that comes out. You recognize there's value in that. You bring that in, and now you have to reconfigure your operation. And so the old way of doing business, you were in that operation for some period of time. And this new way of doing business by incorporating a digital layer is really putting a lot of attention on, you know, current operating constructs where it's very more static and not as dynamic as what it can be by adopting those new technologies. So I know you have a lot of, you know, thoughts on this, Diane, because you and I have talked a lot about this, where you have the three layers. You have a digital layer, a variable resource layer when you do require humans. And then your third and final layer is your strategic fix layer, which is really inverting the firm, if you look at it that way. So maybe it's maybe better for you to say it since you've kind of taught me the ways over the years. But I think that's kind of the new construct we're talking about here as we're incorporating the digital layer first.
Yeah, it is. And it's super exciting. So everyone, right, public and private institutions alike, as well as individuals, have really been on this digital transformation journey. And that journey means something very different for all the actors in society and economy. But to your point, Tom, what we have found in our work back in my days at GE and then subsequently working with teams at NASA and other organizations, we have this abundance of new technological advancements that really make our lives easier and make our work much more productive. To Marco's earlier point, it necessitates a new approach to systems level thinking that is data driven and tech enabled, so that we can constantly evaluate the new capabilities that are rolling online that are setting the expectations of the markets that we serve and enabling greater capabilities within the networks that within which we collaborate in order to drive greater and greater market value. But that also necessitates a new approach to decision-making and resource allocation. So we believe that just at the macro level, we have to stand back and consistently assess what capabilities are coming online, what can be achieved through digital means, first and foremost, to your point. And then the organizational priorities that require a human touch or decision, try to achieve that through a very responsive and extensible, flexible layer. So experts on demand, open talent, that gig resource or expert on demand layer that Ed referenced earlier becomes the majority of your human capital within the organization, but is comprised of talent available in marketplace models. And only then the extent to which you have to resource with fixed on-book resources, that becomes your human resource layer, your full-time layer that is much thinner than in the enterprise that we saw decades ago, but much more strategic. So your human resource layer, your full-time employee layer becomes incredibly strategic, very focused on orchestration and vision and strategy and direction setting and outcomes focused. but not necessarily invested as much in the doing as the thinking and the creation of value. So this inversion of the firm that you referenced, Tom, that allows us to really, for any organization, achieve that exponential performance that we're seeing in the platform economy, that revenue per employee that is dramatically higher than what we saw in decades past in the more traditional kind of fixed resource staffed organization. But it's a very different model. It's an ecosystemic model, and it requires a bit of a shift for organizations to map their journey and the right model for them. But if we think about this really at the highest level, and if we think forward to the next few decades, Marco, contrasting kind of where we've been to where we are and what we might see over the next, say, 5 decades, what are the implications of this rapid advancement and innovation that you envision for society and industry over the next couple of decades?
I think we will see a much more profound change for both society and industry over the next 2 or 3 decades than we have seen certainly over the past couple of decades. See, my impression is that so far, the impact of innovation on industry, on the economy, has been very slow burning, partly because a lot of the new innovations, a lot of new technologies, they tend to be applied first to areas like gaming, social media, advertising. So the social impact is strong, but the economic impact, the impact on industry is relatively minor. And I think that's because if I look as an economist to the past 20 years, what strikes me is that productivity has been relatively stagnant, and governments have tried to essentially patch it up by printing money and spending money at the government level, and that tells you that the innovation has done little. Now I think it changes for a lot of the reasons that the three of you have mentioned, because now companies are understanding how to change their operation, how to reorganize, how to focus more on work, as Ed was emphasizing. And I think now with the dynamics of ecosystems, these innovations will spread more rapidly, they will gain more traction. And because in ecosystems there are more complex and deep interdependencies, I think these will tend to magnify the impact. So on the positive side, I think this will bring faster productivity growth, faster economic growth, a faster improvement in well-being and living standards. But of course, that also comes with a lot more disruption, which means upsetting the balance, the existing equilibria across companies in the economy, across countries. And it also becomes a serious challenge for people at all levels to adapt, to upgrade their skills, to acquire new skills, to learn, to work in a different way. So I think I don't know that we are entirely prepared for this, because we talk a lot about innovation, but over the last 20 years, it's been almost business as usual. And now looking forward, it will not be.
Yeah. Seems like a buckle up, giddy up, and hustle up kind of path ahead. And if we think about that, back over to you, you've spent a lot of time looking at broad systems and how to optimize complex systems. How do we design this in a way and think about this in a way that we minimize the potential and disruptive outcomes and optimize the beneficial outcomes of an ecosystemic model? How do we think about the benefits of the proactive orchestration of ecosystems and minimizing the potential harmful outcomes and experiences that Marco mentioned?
So I think there's a need to have kind of a set of externalities that are being mapped into the value proposition and that are being considered. Like, for example, if you wanted to get work done on your home and you needed a person with a certain skill set, oftentimes you find that it's better to go to a contractor because the contractor provides enough work for that person that they keep doing it. And so I think there will be certain amounts of almost like security that will be guaranteed in certain ways. It's not just necessarily the, you know, Wild West. But I do think the whole way of thinking about the world and work in many ways kind of mirrors the way we think about warfare today. And what I want to say about that is we've thought about it largely in terms of platforms. We say, well, we have a platform, we have the F-35 or we have the F-22, and we've just continually made those marginally better. But really, the best thinking today about warfare is about systems. And so from my perspective, I believe that there will be ways to leverage this kind of theory of abundance. There's excess capacity people have. There are ways that people could do things that maybe would give them more joy, more fulfillment than just their standard job, but as an add-on, as opposed to it being their full-time thing. But it allows them to leverage that excess capacity that they have in a way that brings human flourishing in ways that maybe we hadn't considered before.
So true, and such an important point. You know, when we think about ecosystemic models, we always kind of think about it in kind of two lenses. We think about optimizing performance, the performance of a system, and elevating the human experience. And that's necessarily an and equation and not as much a trade-off kind of decision as it might have been in years past. And it's the ecosystemic models that allow us to really design high value flows of information and economy so that we lean into the complements and deconflict some of those areas of conflict or redundancy. But we've seen this in action very specifically to your point that the human flourishing is really an exciting component of these models where you're really allowing actors, individual actors in an ecosystem to show up with more of themselves and to lean in into their interests, their passions, their areas where they want to develop in a way that allows them to create more of their own path to prosperity within a broader network of requirements and economic kind of pathways.
Yeah, there are two other things on that I think are potentially interesting. One is we've done a fair amount of work with groups that work for, say, the intelligence community, coming up with scenarios to solve, you know, wicked problems. And oftentimes you'll have a CEO of a big company that they can pay him like $1,000 a day or something, nothing compared to what he actually gets paid. But they oftentimes volunteer for these tasks because it's just so fulfilling to go work on these kind of crazy, wicked problems. And they say, don't pay me anything. Just let me volunteer my time. And then we also have an analog to the gig economy in terms of just the cloud, right? And so we could look at companies like Microsoft. There's, you know, Jeff Moore has this thing called Zone to Win, where he looks at the zones of a traditional enterprise. And those zones are like the production zone. That's the salespeople who, you know, hit the numbers, et cetera. You have the administrative zone, which are the people who support that. And then you have the innovation zone and the transformation zone. The key to all these companies actually being transformed is making that transformation zone become 10% of your overall revenue. And that's the piece that usually is the hardest to accomplish. Microsoft did it by putting the guy in charge of cloud in charge of the company. So the way they did it was you almost had to bring in a person with the ecosystem mindset to drive it, because Nadella basically said, we're going to basically cannibalize the most profitable franchise in the history of packaged software, and we're going to move it to the cloud. Sorry, guys, but that's what we're doing. And the response was a 6x increase in the market cap of Microsoft.
Yeah, if that doesn't prove kind of the benefits and the power of ecosystemic models at scale, I'm not sure what else would. If you're not convinced with that simple example, then we need to have another conversation, maybe refer you to a different podcast. But it's so powerful, and there are so many really rich examples. So to that point, Marco, back over to you. How might we envision human well-being changing due to these changing ecosystem models?
But I will first go back to the point that Ed just made, which is this way of operating within ecosystems can be immensely more fulfilling for people at different levels in different aspects of their lives, not just the professional life. But I will also introduce a caveat, which is there is in every economy, there is going to be a set of people who are already endowed with the skills and the attitude you need to really leverage this possibility and to be successful and to enjoy it. That is not necessarily true for everybody. However, I also strongly believe that this new ecosystem framework offers the same kind of opportunity at all skills levels. So it's not just the CEO who can get satisfaction volunteering his time solving new challenges and wicked problems. But I think we have to be very careful, and this is a challenge for society probably, to one meet and explain to people what the opportunity is, because otherwise there is a risk of a technophobic backlash, as we have seen in the past. And secondly, to see what we can and need to do to help people jump in and to acquire the necessary skills, see whether there is any change that needs to be made to institutions, to social security frameworks, safety nets, whatever we can do with the education system, everything we can do so that as many people as possible can take advantage of the gigantic opportunity that Ed has so powerfully described. So I'm optimistic. I would also add very quickly that the other aspect, something else Ed said earlier, which is the reference as to how much of economic growth in a country comes not from the contribution of individuals, but from the coming together of individuals. And there are also studies showing that this has been true through history, where you have the strongest social connections, you have the stronger economic growth, and that carries over through centuries. And I think as we look at the social impact of these ecosystemic innovations, it's something we have to be very mindful of to see that it's oriented in the right, in the constructive direction.
Fantastic. No, great point. Great point. And maybe, Tom, I know you love to play the devil's advocate in so many of these conversations. Let's hear from you. Let's pull you in here. What do you think has changed? What's different? Is this just another shiny object or a fad to gin up some attention and headlines? Or do you think this is real, meaningful, sustainable, valuable change and shift in society and economy?
Yeah, let's see how the best to answer that in a contrarian way. I think that as long as there's a technology layer and there's a trust in the technology layer, I do think that this is sustainable and not just a shiny object. But if people start to lose a trust in that layer and they go back to a social fabric that existed before mass adoption of, you know, Google and internet, the services and everything we depend on day to day, then yeah, we're going to take advantage of the digital landscape and the optionalities and optimization schemas that it provides us. You know, Ed was talking about, you know, kind of what it lent to me was the sharing economy, right? When you're talking about optimizing for capacity, there's always trade-offs, but there's new trade-offs that are being made as a result of, you know, implementing the digital layer in our everyday lives, whether that's optimizing for your own work capacity by taking on a side gig with DoorDash or Uber, getting extra money for your second vacation home through Airbnb, renting out your car through Turo. All these platforms are allowing new capacity and optimization models to emerge. And we're just seeing that extending into not only the normal cloud services, but now with talent in the cloud, having the ability and trust that is built in what does it mean to optimize for human capacity. And so those new optimization models are there. And I think what Ed and Marco are still pointing out here are, you know, in the trade-off space, there could be still some negative consequences of that that are still going to be worked through. But I do believe it all comes back to trust. And if you have digital communities that are being developed and digital teams are being developed, those are still going to require some level of trust at the individual and a team level for it to actually stick and not just be a shiny object.
Bob, great point. And trust is such an important component of these models. And I know, Marco, this is something that you reference all the time, right? Trust in these systems, societal systems, economic systems is paramount. What, from your perspective, what else could disrupt the growth of ecosystems potentially?
I would actually say not what could disrupt, but what will disrupt the growth of ecosystems almost with certainty is, first of all, the defensive reaction we are seeing to the disruption which comes with ecosystems and with innovation. We're already seeing it. We're seeing more nationalism, more protectionism. We're seeing more fragmentation, more balkanization within countries, which go hand in hand with a breakdown of trust. Now, these are all, to some extent, natural reactions. They're understandable, but they are tremendously disruptive to ecosystems. We're also seeing a rising skepticism on the value and the impact of innovations. So I think in many cases, we will see that the impulse will be for people, for governments, for nations to protect themselves. And the way you do it instinctively is to insulate yourself, to break connections. That, I think, is the biggest threat to ecosystems. And of course, an element of this is geopolitics, which is becoming more and more salient. But to my mind, this is a disruption which will happen. So anybody who's working on ecosystems needs to figure out how do we alleviate this.
Yeah, great point. And I know, too, we've had a lot of conversations about supply chain and value chain dynamics and risk and how ecosystems could be implemented in order to create greater resilience and optionality in supply chains to alleviate some of the risk and the fragility that we've seen really show up on a global scale throughout the pandemic and post-pandemic. So it's going to be an exciting few years to see how these models unfold and play out and begin to inform different sectors and regions and economies. So if we think forward, really, we'll be exploring this topic and diving into the implications for different sectors, different regions, and different technologies, but we're more to be exploring ecosystemic implications for the world in front of us. So just a quick rapid fire around the table here, if we could, maybe starting with you, Marco. What are you looking forward to exploring in this podcast series?
Well, there is just so much. But I think for me, some of the issues that really get me fired up are things like the future of education, because I think it's going to be a cornerstone of what we see going forward. And definitely anything related to supply chains, with given my background, is something very near and dear to my heart. But then climate change and geoengineering is also going to be fantastically interesting. So these would be my top three picks, but there's just so much to be excited about.
Fantastic. I share your excitement. Tom, over to you. What are you looking forward to in this series?
I love the ideas we've brought forward with NASA so far on a future disaggregated, you know, decentralized system, and what that means all the way down to the individual level in the future of work. Having multiple digital avatars right now in a metaverse or gaming environment, what would that look like potentially in a digital future of work environment where you actually have multiple digital avatars that have trusted profiles and new digital resumes of work that's been completed completely in a disaggregated, decentralized way.
A massive unlock for the individual and prosperity pathways. I love it. Ed, your thoughts?
First of all, just having more time to hang out with you guys is the main benefit. But I do think that there's both an opportunity to drive system performance, but also leverage systems as feedback control mechanisms. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, there are things that we know now because of the internet about graph theory and connected systems network systems we just wouldn't have known otherwise. And in this case, I think there's like this almost meta model where it sits on top of all these ecosystems and sees how they interact with each other, how health and wellness and how skills development all tie into the overall economic productivity, et cetera. And I think by having these in systems that are not siloed, but interconnected, actually allow us to look at a much more kind of interconnected global economic view of these markets and see all these things as markets.
Love that. Yeah, the meta market model is a massive unlock if we do it right. And we just need to make sure that we've got the right design and governance systems in place to drive the right outcomes. Real quickly, in the final minutes that we have, let's take reverse order here. Ed, what would you love for our listeners to come away with for this session and for this series?
That the future is in ecosystems, that today we hear a lot of talk about systemic things, and most of the things are kind of societal ills. But systemic systems actually are the greatest force for virtue and good. And if the governance is correct and the people embrace them, they actually can be used to drive human flourishing, not prevent it.
Man, that's awesome. Pretty powerful stuff. Tom, hard to follow that one, but you.
Yeah, that's a pretty difficult one to follow there. But I'm looking forward to getting the listeners an insight into the great conversations we've had over the last year and a half with our NASA teammates and just the big thinkers that have been coming forward with this eye towards what's the next few decades look like. I know we focused a lot on aviation and aerospace, but we've been cross-sector, cross-industry in our review and discussions with some really incredible folks from around the globe that have come in for these. So I'm excited to share some of those insights that have been private in the last year and a half that we're going to be making public through these discussions as well.
Excellent. Thanks, Tom. And Marco, back to you.
Very much following up on Tom's lead, I think my message to everybody in the audience is the following. We're going to be handling a set of fascinating and extremely important issues, which are complex, but will be tackled in a way which is accessible. These are issues on which there is a lot to learn. There is a lot of uncertainty. This is an invaluable opportunity for everybody, including the four of us, to learn more about all this stuff and to make up our own mind, trying to understand it with our own critical thinking. So to me, this is the biggest message. This is a fantastic opportunity for learning and thinking more with our own heads.
Love it. Okay. And with that, I think we are at the top of our hour and end of our time for this particular session. So as you can hear, we are extremely passionate about this topic and couldn't be more excited to bring this podcast to you. We'll be releasing a new episode every week where we'll be joined by thought leaders, academics, futurists, scientists, and economists who will be sharing their insights and expertise, their work and worldviews on topics shaping our society, economy, and the world around us. So if you like the sound of this as much as we do, please subscribe to the podcast and follow the website at SocianWorks Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. Thanks so much, and we'll see you at the next episode.